This is Fresh Air. Terry Gross is on vacation. I'm Neil Conan. 225 years ago this month, the fledgling forces of rebellion met an army of British professionals in the first pitched battle of the American Revolution. It was very nearly the last. After the Battle of Brooklyn, George Washington was lucky to evacuate his outnumbered and inexperienced army across the East River to Manhattan. The key point on the battlefield in Brooklyn was a stone house at a crossroads. In their first taste of battle, a small group of soldiers from Maryland assaulted that house three times. They couldn't hold it, but their gallant fight gave the rest of Washington's men time to escape. The American army would live to fight another day. The Marylanders were led by General William Alexander, also known as Lord Stirling. That largely forgotten commander and this neglected battle are the subject of an unusual new movie called The Brave Man. Here's an excerpt.
Our morning started right about here, at 4 a.m., dawn, long before this became Greenwood Cemetery. The date was August 27, 1776.
A Tuesday.
Just 6 weeks after the Declaration of Independence had been read in Philadelphia.
A British fleet of more than 400 ships, including 30 ships of war, had gathered in the harbor of Staten Island.
2 days previously, thousands of redcoats had crossed the Narrows to Bay Ridge out there. When he heard, General Washington reinforced the heights in Brooklyn back up that way to 10,000 men. This place was called Martens Pass back then. The track called the Shore Road crossed it parallel to the harbor on its way toward Brooklyn. Originally, it had been an Indian trail. And now, we call it Fourth Avenue.
Actor Graham Malcolm, who stars first as the narrator and gradually evolves into the character of General Alexander, Lord Stirling. The writer, producer, and director of The Brave Man is Joseph McCarthy. He joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
When Graham Malcolm points down Fourth Avenue, what we see is Fourth Avenue. And later, as General Alexander, we see him dodging buses and taxis as he moves his men around the battlefield. Why did you decide to set a costume piece about the American Revolution in the streets of modern Brooklyn?
Well, first off, I didn't have enough money for the 32,000 actors we'd need for the British side and 12,000 people we'd need for the American side. And I guess I was interested in the way we see history. I realized as I walked down Fourth Avenue in the midst of working on another film that you could actually see the landscape of the battle even in this highly developed urban environment. I mean, this was the first suburb, and this had been farmlands for New York, and now it has totally evolved into a semi-industrial area. So still, when you look down from the tops of the small hills, you could see the valleys where the streams must have been. And I realized that when you walk around Brooklyn, you can actually see the history still there.
You not only use Brooklyn itself as itself, you use toy soldiers, kids riding on bikes to act as cavalry, a fleet of red rental cars as standing in for the British Army. This is all pretty experimental.
I was trying to move from the present to the past. I was trying to carry my audience with me, and I think I had the privilege, in a certain sense, to substitute representations of equal power. So when the narrator is looking out toward the British lines, which were approximately down at 33rd Street and 4th Avenue, he saw a red line of men, 5,000 men lined up against him. How could I represent that kind of force on the streets today? And I decided that I could rent 16 red cars, line them up across 4th Avenue, which, if you're a Brooklynite, you know is not a trivial undertaking, and have them lie, I guess, looming, waiting to attack. And I felt that that would properly represent what we saw. The same with the bicycles. He's still in modern dress. The British were attacking on the right. I felt that a group of kids on with red shirts on, actually you can't see it, but they're wearing Grant's Lobster Shack. General Grant was the general of the British Army. T-shirts, and they come swooping around to the right, and that was a sense of what was happening. So we were trying to move between the present and the past.
I'm intrigued that in such a short film, it's only 33 minutes long, you do manage to bring out the character of your star, General William Alexander.
Well, thank you. I was trying to, and I guess I have to credit Graham Malcolm a great deal for helping to make that work. He really took the words and made them his own. You see a man being revealed slowly. He starts out arm's length and distant, and you realize that he was a very substantial individual in the colonies. He had at one time could probably have been described as the richest man in America. And he pretended to be, not pretended, but in the English sense, pretended to the earldom of Stirling in Scotland. And he had distant connections that made that real. He pursued that inheritance, which would have given him half of Long Island, most of Maine, and all of Newfoundland, for 10 years and essentially bankrupted himself. So when he goes into this battle, he's busted. He's living on the imperiousness of his good name. And I think that's one of the motivating forces that I was looking at when I found what I think is the answer to why he decided to attack the British at that moment.
Did you come to an answer to that question of as to why this man decided to go into battle against what he and I'm sure a lot of other Americans still regarded as his king?
It's complicated, and I think there were a lot of reasons, but I think there was real frustration. He'd pursued this inheritance, which by the right of primogeniture should have been his, in England for a number of years, and finally it simply was not accepted. The Parliament chose not to deal with it. And, you know, this land grant had been given in 1604, and by 1773, the land was fully developed, and there was no need for them to have some nobleman claiming all the return on this investment. So I think he was really frustrated, and I think he was a man who had a number of failures in his life, and this opportunity presented himself. He had the men. The Marylanders were young men, age 15 to maybe 25, who had been training. The militiamen were required to train once a year, and apparently these young men were wealthy enough to afford real uniforms, and they had the modern muskets. And they were trained in European fighting techniques, and Stirling found himself with them and with a responsibility, and he accepted it.
He also had a strong idea of what they were fighting for, and the crux of the battle and the crux of your film is a seesaw battle over a stone house. Each side attacked in turn. The 400 Marylanders steadily whittled as the much larger British numbers began to tell. The last charge, the third charge of the Marylanders, and again, let's hear Graham Malcolm, the actor, as General Alexander.
Now, Marylanders, now is the time to take what is ours. Prepare to charge. We will take that house because it is ours. It does not belong to them. We have made this land. We have cut these roads. We have built these houses. Charge, men, and take it from them! A charge caught them by surprise as they were reloading. We drove them out of the garden. One group entered the house. And soon the redcoats they found inside were pushed from the upper story windows, and we killed them on the ground. Again, we found the cannon loaded and turned them on the fleeing British. Through the cannon smoke, I could see General Cornwallis watching from a distance. Behind him, rank after rank of fresh soldiers stood.
General Alexander Stirling was captured in the battle. Actually, he surrendered.
Oh, that's true. And then he was marched off and sat on Admiral Howe's ship for 6 weeks, after which he was traded back to the Americans for the governor of Florida and the Bahamas.
It's quite common in those days for the opposing commander to be offered the hospitality of his opponent's table.
Very much so. He knew a number of these people from his pursuit of his earldom, and he would have fit in perfectly comfortably. I mean, the part of the reason we chose Graham was his wonderful Scots-British accent. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I hoped is that people would understand that these were part of the same country. This was, in a certain sense, a civil war. They knew each other. Stirling knew Cornwallis. Stirling had listened to Grant. They were part of the same country, and it was a big deal for them to break off.
Our guest is filmmaker Joseph McCarthy. He's made a short film about the Battle of Brooklyn called The Brave Man. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Joseph McCarthy, writer, director, and producer of the short film The Brave Man. What was the significance of this particular battle in your view?
The first significance is Stirling Alexander stopped the British. I like to say that he was like a traffic accident on the Brooklyn Queens Expressway. The British were the British. You got to understand this. Yes, he recognized 15,000 men coming from the backside that was totally undefended, but those men were coming up a road that was the width of a wagon, with forests on both sides. So when he hit the front, Cornwallis's advance there, the Grenadiers. I think there were 2,000 men. It stopped the British army, and when an army stops, what does it do? It sits down. Once to get an army started of that size takes a long time. Howe and Clinton, who were the British generals, had hoped to arrive in the early part of the day at the foot of Brooklyn Heights and overwhelm the 12,000 Americans. I guess there were 9,000 because 3,000 were in the field at the time. But because of the action of these men, he was unable to do that. And then Washington was so impressed with what Stirling's men had been able to do, he thought he'd stand and fight the best army in the world. Other minds convinced him over the next day and a half that maybe being stuck with your back to the water with the largest fleet in the world, potentially being able to come up the river behind you with the best army in the world in front of you, wasn't the best place to be. And he pulled off the most miraculous escape, retreat, that I think most, it's comparable to Dunkirk, that people have not heard of anything like this before.
With the great assistance of the men of Marblehead, the fishermen and sailors.
Yes, very much so. And people from up and down the East River who contributed their boats and their own skills, too. The Marbleheaders, apparently, there's a description of one of them who crossed the East River, which is nearly a mile wide, 20 times with boats loaded up to the gunwales. Washington was able to get 9,000-plus men off Brooklyn Heights with their supplies, with their weapons, and their horses. Over the course of the evening, Howe arrived at the Heights the next morning to find the embers of the watchfires that they'd kept going throughout the night while they stealthily sneaked across the river. I mean, it's just an amazing story.
As you mentioned, the Howe brothers had arrived in New York with a huge fleet and a huge army. Clearly, they hoped that this display of overwhelming power and maybe one short, sharp shock would convince the Americans to give up the rebellion. Despite the best efforts of General Alexander and the Marylanders, they did quickly chase George Washington off the Brooklyn Heights and onto Manhattan and chased him away from there further. Why didn't that one short, sharp shock have the desired effect?
Well, I think Washington survived with 9,000 men and his gear. I think there is some sense that the Americans were heartened by the resistance that Sterling and the Marylanders put up. I think in a certain sense that they were not defeated. They were defeated in the Gowanus Valley, but a strategic retreat is a perfectly legitimate military tactic, and that's what happened. It was he pulled off a strategic retreat, moved to Manhattan. And there's a story that that the Americans were marching up Bloomingdale Road, which we now call Broadway, as the British were marching down the Boston Post Road, which is Third Avenue, and there were forest in between them as they. I mean, you have to live in Manhattan to really get this, but it would be, I mean, there are lots of trees, and the two armies couldn't see each other. So the Americans escaped north. I think the first firefight was up about 110th Street when the Americans resisted the British who were chasing them.
Joseph McCarthy, we see an awful lot of Revolutionary War battlefields memorialized, as Saratoga, certainly Yorktown, Bunker Hill. What happened in Brooklyn?
Commerce. If you read Mike Wallace's book, Gotham, which everybody sees as daunting, this 1,400-page history of New York, but it's really not. It's just a great read. You realize that New York was really founded as a commercial enterprise, and it still is. That's the driving force. And this land where the Marylanders and the rest of the men who died in the Gowanus Valley were buried in long open pits was described in the deed for that land as a national treasure, and it said that this land should not be built upon. But Mr. Litchfield, whose house sits up in Prospect Park, bought the land down the hill from him along Park Slope and down to the Gowanus Valley and developed the whole area. You see it now as sort of flat and paved and very urban, but at the time that this battle was fought, it was a rocky, hilly hillsides with ravines, and the farms were along the side of an inlet called the Gowanus Creek.
Far wilder than the rather, the tamed views of Prospect Park.
Well, you can see the original landscape in Greenwood Cemetery. The Greenwood Cemetery and Park Slope and Prospect Park and that whole area are the terminal moraine for the last ice age. And creeks and springs ran down the side of this, and it was really hilly. So they scraped the tops off the hills and filled in the ravines. And that's how you wind up with a beautiful brownstone neighborhood, Park Slope.
Joseph McCarthy's film is The Brave Man. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
A reenactment of the Battle of Brooklyn will be held in Prospect Park later this month. For more information on McCarthy's film, log on to his website, www.thebraveman.com. Coming up, a tribute to Mississippi John Hurt. This is Fresh Air.